The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Good morning, Anthony. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, we're not going to talk about the state of terror in Israel and some of the events of recent days, but just a little update. There was an incident overnight, took place in Ashkelon. The report says that a policeman was on operational duty at an apartment block in Ashkelon. I'm not quite sure what that means, but he found somebody there, or he saw somebody in the vicinity who looked suspicious. The policeman apparently approached this individual to perform a security check on him when a knife was pulled out in an attempt to stab the officer. We understand that the officer responded very quickly and the man was neutralized. He effectively was shot and he was killed on the spot, the attacker. The officer was slightly injured, went to hospital. He seems to be okay. And we understand that the terrorist has already been identified, a man in his 40s from Hebron, who was living illegally in Israel, and just adds to the series of terror attacks that we've experienced in the past few weeks. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett visiting the site of the Tel Aviv bar in Rehov Dizengoff, where the terror attack took place on Thursday. And a little bit more positive news is the fantastic story that 120 Ukrainian refugees will be celebrating their bar mitzvah very, very soon at an event that's being organized by Chabad at the Kotel. These are boys who are either now of bar mitzvah age and can celebrate their bar mitzvahs, or have already become of bar mitzvah age and just never had the opportunity for one reason or another to celebrate their bar mitzvah. So one of the really nice things that is coming out of Israel hosting Ukrainian refugees, whether they're here on Aliyah or they're here temporarily, in the most cases, these are boys who are here temporarily and intend to return back to Ukraine after the war, whenever that might be. But in the meantime, having the opportunity to celebrate their bar mitzvah at the Kotel, I think that's great.
That's wonderful. In the same vein as that, how many Ukrainian refugees has Israel absorbed?
I'm not sure of the latest number. There are quite a few thousand Olim, new immigrants who have arrived, who don't fall into the limit that has been set by the Ministry of the Interior. My understanding the last time I looked was around 5,000 who have come here temporarily, being hosted here, people who are effectively not entitled to claim citizenship under the law of return, who are being hosted by Israel and the people of Israel. I was going to say the Israeli government, but really it's about being hosted by the people of Israel, because the nation has really opened themselves up, have found accommodation, have helped to put the children into schools with Ukrainian or Russian-speaking facilities so that they can continue their education and have some sort of a framework within which to operate, helping the mothers. It's mostly mothers, very, very few fathers indeed, because at the moment it is not permitted for men to leave Ukraine, men of military serving age. And so what we're finding is that it's mostly mothers and children who are coming here. And really, the people of Israel have done whatever they can in order to facilitate them and to help them as they get through what is a very, very tough period in their lives.
Yeah. Let's talk about Israeli politics. The joint Arabist party in the Knesset has become embroiled in controversy or overstatements by its leaders. So what were the statements and why have they entered the controversy?
Well, the context is that the Joint Arab List has become something of a kingmaker in the Knesset since the resignation from the coalition of Idit Shtilman last week, and the fact that the governing coalition now no longer has a majority. It has the ability to call upon 60 members of Knesset to support them, and of course that is not a majority. And so the Joint Arab List now becomes kingmaker, because they could potentially support the government and give the government the majority that they need. Now, the Joint Arab List, in the form of the leader Ayman Odeh, has made a few quite interesting and somewhat controversial statements, the first of which is that the Joint Arab List has no intention of propping up the Naftali Bennett government. That was the first statement that he made. The second statement that he made was, and we have no intention of joining a Netanyahu-led government. So he is very much sitting on the fence And will, I presume, support whichever side he feels it's appropriate to support on any given subject matter, and not be willing to commit himself to support one side or the other on an ongoing basis. So effectively, what that means is that we really have no ability to form a majority in the Knesset almost under any constellation. And so this is why I think the Prime Minister has decided to try and push ahead with governing even under this current minority situation, because he understands that the opposition can't really muster the 61 votes that would be required to bring the government down. And so he will just continue to govern on a minority basis. And it's going to be interesting to see how he will engineer his way through those votes that require 61 votes as opposed to a simple majority of those voting in the Knesset. But in addition to that, yesterday, the leader of the Joint Arab List, Ayman Odeh, actually called upon young people not to join the security forces. Now, initially, his call was to the Arab population to say to them, don't join the security forces. And then he was forced to try to clarify himself by saying, I didn't mean that people shouldn't join the police force. What I meant was that people shouldn't join the army of the oppressor, of the that's exactly what he said. And then he went on to even clarify that further by saying, I'm not only calling upon Arab young people, I'm also calling upon Jewish young people not to join the army of the oppressor. And so he's been very much castigated across the Israeli press for these statements. And in fact, I understand the police have also decided to probe to see whether this is tantamount to a call for Arab police officers to disobey orders, because initially he didn't make the clarification that he wasn't calling upon the members of the police force not to join the security forces. And in fact, there are quite a number of Arabs who serve within the police force. And so that is why the police feel that this, coming from a member of Knesset, could be tantamount to calling upon the security forces to lay down their arms, to go against orders, to disobey commands from their seniors within the police force. And, Naftali Bennett, our Prime Minister, has countered that by saying that I am very proud of Arab soldiers in the IDF, Arab soldiers in the Israel police, and all members of our security forces from all religions and sectors who protect us in these days. That was from Prime Minister Naftali Bennett in response to this very, very strange statement by Ayman Odeh, trying to come out to encourage Arab youth particularly, but then afterwards trying to sort of clarify himself and make it a little less controversial. But obviously he is in the limelight at the moment because of his position as kingmaker in the Knesset and potentially having the ability to either support the government or indeed to bring the government down if the opposition can get their act together and somehow muster the 61 votes that might be available to them, which currently I can't see how they would do. But nonetheless, the Joint Arab List, ironically, at the moment, is really the party probably with more power than is commensurate with the numbers that serve within the party.
It's so interesting. I mean, again, it's raising a question for me as a Jew who lives in the diaspora, whether Israel could be a democratic secular state if it can actually survive like that, or democratic and Jewish at the same time. The two are, they're kind of at odds. The two concepts are at odds with one another.
It sort of goes back to our conversation last week, and I think that I think it's correct to say that up until now, Israel has survived as a Jewish secular state. There, of course, are many rules and regulations, laws in place that conform with halakha, particularly laws of marriage and family law, things that associate with divorce and things like that, which very much conform to halakha. But on the whole, people who are Jewish and are secular, or who are Jewish and non-Orthodox, and there is a whole host of people particularly in the United States, who classify themselves as Jews, who are conservative or reform, and might be conservative or reform not because they want to look for some sort of a watered-down version of Judaism and just somehow have a community within that which they can associate without having to conform to the strictest orthodox rules, but because they really believe that some of the pronouncements by the rabbis over the years, which are being adhered to by the Orthodox community, have some question mark around them, and therefore they don't look for a watered down version, but they look to rather believe in the Torah text as it is written, rather than looking at it as it has been interpreted over the years by Chazal and by other people, other rabbis who have influenced our halakha. So we have a whole community of Jews out there who say we don't want to conform necessarily to orthodox rules of Judaism, but we do want to be Jewish. And I think coming to Israel, no matter which brand of Judaism you choose to follow, or indeed choose not to follow, I think you can feel here that Israel is Jewish, is a country for Jews, is a Jewish country for Jews, and that everybody has the ability and the right to follow whichever brand, whichever track they choose to follow, without feeling that their rights are being impinged upon by others who are imposing upon them. So I think that that's really where we want to be, because it's still true that the vast majority of Jews living in Israel are non-Orthodox, and we want to try to accommodate their rights as much as we want to try to accommodate those who wish to follow very, very stringent halakha according to Orthodox rules.
So interesting. I mean, most people, if you say, you know, do you believe in the Ten Commandments? Do you keep the Ten Commandments? They'll say yes. Say, well, don't murder and you don't steal, but you keep Shabbos. that's the clincher. Anthony, very, very quickly, the Vatican has announced that the Pope may visit Jerusalem later this year. So,
yeah, sorry about the noise in the background. I apologize. I hope it's not disturbing. But yes, this has been a very interesting announcement that's come out from the Vatican yesterday, which says that the Pope, who will already be on a visit to Lebanon in June, could possibly fly to Jerusalem from Lebanon in order to come here, not to visit the holy sites and not to be hosted by the Israeli government, but to meet with the Russian Orthodox Patriarch. That is the intention right now. And so I've seen a whole series of plans which says that the Pope will fly from Lebanon to Jordan, and from Jordan will be helicoptered to Jerusalem to allow him to have this meeting with the Russian Orthodox Patriarch. And then from there, we'll fly back to Rome after his visit, his official visit to Lebanon. The Pope is 85 years old. He has already met with the Russian Orthodox Patriarch once before in Cuba back in 2016. Interestingly, that was the very, very first time that the Pope had met with a Russian Orthodox head of the Russian Orthodox Church since the schism that was created in Christianity, which goes back to 1054. It was the first meeting between the two leaders since 1054, and potentially in June of this year will be the second meeting. I think this is really all about the fact that the Russian Orthodox Patriarch has come out strongly supporting Russia's position in the war in Ukraine. And I think that the Pope might feel that he would like to have a conversation about that. So this is going to be an interesting one to watch.
Anthony Reich, I'll say have a wonderful day. Just very quickly, do you like licorice or do you not like licorice?
Oh, I love licorice, but I don't like ironing up trees.
Yeah, but you do far more riskier things. Anyway, Anthony Reich, have a wonderful day, and you've got Howard back tomorrow.